I'm going to invite Henry Rees to speak to us now. Henry is a technical staff member at the IFRS Foundation, and he was a lead on the development of the revenue standard. I'm going to share my slides, and Henry will take us through a few slides, and then I will speak to you about areas where we believe there are research questions of interest that we would like researchers to have a look at.
Thank you very much, Anne. Hello, everybody. I'd just like to add my thanks to Christopher and Christian for the insightful paper and presentation. And by the way, I did like to see that reference to the space cadets and dinosaurs in the paper. It's part of the sort of folklore, if you like, of the IFRS 15 project, and it's not captured in the basis for conclusions. So I think if we move on to slide four, and just quickly recapping, IFRS 15 was issued in 2014. So in fact, it's not so new now. It's really coming up for its third reporting season, with this annual reporting season coming up on us. And it was the outcome of one of the ISB's most significant standard setting projects in recent years. And I say that because IFRS 15 probably affected almost any company that reports revenue. And it swept aside a couple of standards, that's IS 18 and IS 11, that were really showing their age, and which I don't honestly think could have been fixed or patched up. And in their place, IFRS 15 provided a comprehensive model for the recognition, measurement and disclosure of revenue. IFRS 15, of course, is also significant because it was the most successful outcome of the IASB and the FASB's collaboration to improve and converge their respective standards. And despite the pressures of different starting points for the projects and different stakeholder feedback along the way, the two boards were able to issue a joint standard that remains substantially converged today. And given the fact we're talking about revenue, typically the starting point for investors' analysis, I think the fact that IFRS and US GAAP have the same requirements for revenue, of course, is of huge benefits for the capital markets. So if we move on to the next slide now, and we look back to what the IASB and indeed, of course, the FASB hope to achieve by issuing the new revenue standard. A key aim was to improve the comparability of revenue across different companies and different capital markets, and also to achieve this by having a much more robust and sustainable model for revenue recognition. Let's not forget IAS 18 and IAS 11 didn't really explain why revenue for a good is recognised at a point in time, but for services it's recognised over time. It just said that's what it is. So instead of a company searching in the back of IAS 18 for the closest example to the transaction it was trying to figure out the revenue accounting for, it gets with IFRS 15 a five-step process to work through to determine when and how much revenue to recognise. And crucially, that process is underpinned by a robust underlying basis as to what revenue is meant to depict. And personally, I think that's one of the big successes of IFRS 15. And for example, it means now that the IFRS Interpretations Committee is actually able to respond to questions about revenue and has done so and has supported the implementation of IFRS 15. Another key aim in the project was to improve the usefulness of the disclosures companies provide. Revenue, of course, is a key metric for users, but investors said that in some cases they found it difficult to understand a company's revenues, especially based on the limited information sometimes in the financial statements themselves. So the boards wanted to provide investors not just with more information, but with more useful information, company-specific and business-specific, business model-specific information that really provides better insights into how the company earns and reports revenue, and including, of course, what are some of the key judgments and estimates involved. I used to tell people that you really ought to be able to at least tell which sector a company is from the disclosures. So we move on to slide six. Just put this here for completeness, because clearly it would be strange to be talking about IFRS 15 and not include the five-step process. What I think implementation of IFRS 15 has shown is that these five steps have really created a common language for how to think through a revenue question in a structured way. And the new notion of a performance obligation, which underpins all of this, has definitely become part of the accountant's vocabulary, if you like. And almost every guidebook that you see on the revenue standard is based around these five steps. And looking back, I think it was probably very helpful, really, that they got established quite early in the project. They were there, if you look back in the first exposure draft in 2010, and were largely unchanged in the final standard. The next slide, I don't want to particularly dwell on transition, but just highlighted that two methods that were allowed for the transition, and I'm highlighting them because, and I think Anne will talk about this later on, there could be some lessons learned for future standard setting for major projects in the future, just by examining how well these two methodologies and the related disclosures worked for the investors, given this was a major implementation of a standard. And then lastly, we included three slides on some of the expected effects, breaking it down by various industries, really just to stimulate possible research. And looking at these, of course, amongst the various industries, the effects on the telcos was always sort of viewed as the poster child for the new standard. And almost all mobile phone providers around the world were significantly affected by the need to identify performance obligations and allocate the transaction price to all of those performance obligations, and therefore recognize revenue for the handset up front more akin to its value that's been provided to the customer, rather than just based on whatever cash had been received. Maybe I'll just flag one less sort of effect that wasn't so well trailed, perhaps, the effect of having a clear principle for why revenue is recognised compared to what we had in IS 18 or IS 11. And if you move on to the next slide, perhaps, this was the effect on service companies. And having a clear principle really led some service companies to rethink their pattern of overtime revenue recognition. So, for instance, we saw some outsourcing companies changing their pattern of revenue recognition from recognizing revenue in proportion to the costs incurred to recognizing revenue more evenly, given that they were providing the same service to their own clients each month. And that could result in quite big changes to the pattern of revenue and profit if the company was incurring higher costs in the earlier months of the contracts than later. So just wanted to flag there one interesting effect that I saw coming out of the new standard that perhaps wasn't a sort of a flagged effect in advance. So, Anne, that's all I wanted to say quickly in those comments, and I'll hand it over to you now to talk about the research opportunities. Thank you.